Hey everybody, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks weekly podcast. Before we get into the contents of this particular episode, I want to let you know that the fine folks at Medtronic are doing us an amazing solid at Device Talks Boston. On April 30th, the day before Device Talks Boston, they're going to open their doors to their new surgical robotics center to a small group of Device Talks Boston attendees. You have to register for the conference to be part of this group. We're going to select you at random. Anyone who has already registered and has indicated they're interested in this tour will be thrown in the pool. Anyone else who registers before March 31st, their name will be thrown in the pool as well. April comes along. I'm going to choose names at random. We're going to randomize the whole thing, and we're going to pick 50 folks who are going to be able to check out the facility, to take Hugo for a test drive, to check out their mock ORs where they do training, and just a great networking opportunity to start off what's going to be a fantastic couple of days at Device Talks Boston. So make sure you register if you haven't already before March 31st. And to add to the incentive a little bit, we're rolling out our podcast discount code, DTWeekly25. So if you register now before March 31st and use our code, you'll save yourself a little bit of money and you'll have the chance to be part of a great networking and educational opportunity. Once again, we'll choose those names at random and I'll reach out, let you know if you were selected. But if you're not selected, you're going to still be part of an amazing couple of days at Device Talks Boston and our Robotics Summit and Expo. It's going to be thousands of folks there who love technology like you do, who love medtech like you do, who love robotics like you do. So I don't know why you wouldn't want to be there anyway. So go to devicetalks.com, or more specifically, boston.devicetalks.com to register. And once again, do it before March 31st if you want to be considered to be part of the Medtronic tour. We'll choose those folks at random. It's going to be a great tour in a great few days. So go to boston.devicetalks.com. Now, as for this episode, we'll have conversations from Medtronic, we'll have a word from our great sponsor, Aptics, and we'll have an interview I did with worldwide president of specimen management at BD about a very new cool blood draw device that they have and why it's so important. You'll find out. All right, let's get this podcast episode started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Chris Neumarker, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Tom, doing well, except I have a problem.
Oh, no. I'm sorry to hear that.
I know, yeah.
Perhaps I could help.
Okay, here's the thing. So I'm sitting here. I'm drinking coffee out of my Los Angeles mug, you know, because I like to grab a mug whenever I visit a place. I don't have a Boston mug anymore because the one I got at Logan at the last Device Talks Boston was defective.
Defective?
I mean, it went like searing hot when you heated up coffee in the microwave in it, which maybe – I mean, I don't know. I know you don't heat up coffee in the microwave, so
we talked about microwave coffee, Chris.
Yeah, but there's something in that paint, and that Logan Boston mug.
Did it bleed?
I almost bled. I mean, I grabbed the handle and it was like.
Why am I laughing at that?
It was like, you know. But you know, when am I gonna be back in Boston
That's
again
to get a
Boston
question.
To get
That's
a really mug, a quality Boston mug? I don't know.
You know what I could do to help you? I'd be happy to put on a conference May 1st and 2nd at the Boston Convention Exhibition Center. We could put Device Talks Boston. We'll call it that.
Oh, you'll do a whole conference so I can get a new Boston.
Of course, for you, wow. Chris Neumarker, let's do that. Yeah.
Buddy.
We'll invite
thanks, man.
Medtronic, Intuitive, we'll invite
it.
Stryker and Baxter. We'll have Distal Motion there.
My gosh.
Quantum Surgical there. All for you.
Man.
Medtronic's going to give a keynote address, and Medtronic might even, you know, if For you.
Wow.
I'm sure they would open up the doors to their new surgical robotic suite and allow a really select group of folks to go visit and play with
you.
That's
fantastic. I feel
is that good enough?
I just feel loved, Tom. I feel the appreciation. It's just wow. Wow.
You are loved, Chris Neumarker. The whole medical device world loves you. Device talkers everywhere. Cross your fingers, think good thoughts about Chris Neumarker's mug.
That's
and,
right.
and make sure we get him to Boston so he can buy another Starbucks mug at the Logan Airport in Boston.
That's right.
Because that's the only place you can get a mug is the Starbucks at the
airport.
I just
said it was the Starbucks. Can you take the call from Starbucks Legal?
Hey, they have very nice mugs.
They have quality mugs. Yeah, you know, good.
Quality mugs. They're quality product. Don't get me wrong. I'm not dissing the Starbucks. So.
Yeah.
No, that's a really good lead in, Chris Neumarker, for a device to Xbox.
That's fantastic. So beyond me getting a mug, all these people can get to Device Talks Boston and like see these amazing talks about our industry and as well as the fantastic networking. So.
And you know what we can do for all these kind people who are giving good wishes? We can create a code called, we'll call it DT Weekly 25. And if they register using that code, they'll save 25% off the price.
Oh, man.
Awesome. And they can buy their own mug with the save.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Yeah. Or a refrigerator magnet, or a T-shirt, or you know, if you want to even get really Boston, I mean, like, you know, like get a, you know, like, you know, I don't know, like, you know, get. You know, get a Bruins shirt. I don't know. Like, just, you know, go all in.
I think we should, for our merch, we need to get our merch. What if we had Chris and Tom Hummel figurines? How great would that be?
I love it. Hummel figurines. Like, we're both, I don't know. I mean, no.
Oh, Lord.
No, I'm not getting in Lederhosen.
No
leather. I'm not a leather pants person. I'm not going to do that.
We will not. No.
Well,
good point.
Yeah.
No Lederhosen. No little caps.
Yeah.
No holding little kittens or anything.
No.
Like that. Okay.
Bird on my shoulder.
Nope. I'll let the merch department know that's a no go.
Tell our merch people no Chris and Tom Hummels.
This is what happens when we don't have a guest in the studio. I think people have figured out, like, they must not have anyone serious in the studio with them. They're not interviewing anyone, so why am I listening to this nonsense?
Like these,
that's a really great
these
question.
These guys are going... because they care.
They do. They do.
Yes,
and they want to meet us, I hope, at Device Talks Boston
totally.
Again. May 1st and 2nd. At the Boston Convention Exhibition Center. And I already talked about the Medtronic offer at the top of the podcast, so people know about that. DT Weekly 25, save yourself 25%. And just go to boston.devicetalks.com to check out the agenda. It's going to be a great couple of days. We're going to really start amping up the marketing on that because we want there to be a huge crowd. And, of course, we're co-located with our surgical robotics, robotic summit and expo. Which has robots from Disney and going to have folks from Amazon talking. So it's going to be a powerful couple of days. So I hope folks, and if you register for Device Talks Boston, you can get the expo for free and vice versa. So lots going on, a lot of great vendors, not a lot of great partners on the floor, folks who can help you design and make medical devices ready to offer their services. So it's really a great place to make some med tech. So I hope folks who are listening to this nonsense we'll stop listening, go to boston.devicetalks.com to register and use the code. What's the code, Chris? Do you remember?
Get Chris
remember
mug. Like, no, don't use that.
DT Weekly.
DT
Weekly 25.
DT Weekly 25. There you go.
25? Yeah.
25% off. There you go.
25% off. That's why. Yeah. 25%
good.
Off.
Coffee's kicking in. So.
Coffee's kicking
DT
in.
DT Weekly
we'll get
25. I'll get the new mug.
Yeah, no figurines.
No.
We're all good.
No figurines. No bobbleheads. No.
All right, let's get this podcast episode started. First, I want to share an excerpt from Device Talks Tuesday's episode that we had this week. We actually did something new, and I mentioned in the podcast last week. I might have mentioned it the week before that. We had three device talks Tuesdays instead of one, and we had two of them on Wednesday and Thursday, but they're still, in my mind and heart, device talks Tuesdays. But we focused the entire week on surgical robotics. We had Intuitive Surgical on Tuesday, and we had Virtual Incision on Thursday. And you can check out both those presentations by going to devicetalks.com and registering. You can watch those on demand, and both are definitely worth doing it. So check that out. Also worth checking out this episode that we're previewing here. I took an excerpt from a conversation I had with Nikolai Begg, who's the Senior Director of Portfolio R&D of Robotic Surgical Technologies at Medtronic. I'm doing it for two reasons. Number one, it was great. It was actually our received the highest registrations of the three, although it was pretty close. They were all very, very popular. And thank you to everyone who registered and took part in the discussions. But I just pulled out this part from Nikolai's discussion because it was sounded the most podcasty to me. We had a little bit of a discussion about innovation in surgical robotics. And I'm also I'm pulling it out because that episode was sponsored by our friends at Aptics, who are sponsoring this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. So before I begin the short interview, I think I've got like 5 minutes or so, portion of the hour-long interview I did with Nikolai Begg, I did want to bring in Aptics. And I spoke with CEO Greg Tobin. Greg Tobin, it's great to have you back on the podcast. We're seeing Aptics' name all over the place. It might be a new name that folks don't recognize, but certainly you've been doing medtech for a long, long time. So it might help everyone if you could take a moment to tell us about Aptics.
Thanks, Tom. Certainly. Aptics brings together the aptitude and excellence of more than a dozen companies with a 70-year-plus track record in manufacturing. We rebranded last October, and while our name may be new, our history of helping customers solve complex challenges with confidence is not new. We have a legacy of entrepreneurship and a make-it-happen mindset paired with deep expertise in specialized capabilities, including molding, extrusion, coating applications, and assembly, all of which we've integrated under Aptics. And across our global network of more than 10 locations in the U.S., Canada, Mexico, and China, we're able to provide comprehensive support to our customers.
I will hear more from Greg Tobin a little later in the podcast, but if you want to find out more about Aptics right now, you can go to its website, aptics.com. That's aptyx.com, and we'll get into the branding a bit later in our conversation with CEO Greg Tobin. But now, again, I want to play an excerpt of a conversation I had with Nikolai Begg of Medtronic. He'll also, Medtronic will be well represented at Device Talks Boston. And as I mentioned a few times, they're also going to be opening up their surgical office doors to a select group of Device Talks Boston attendees. And if you want to be considered for that visit, if you want to have a chance at being part of that visit, register for Device Talks Boston before March 31st. So let's start this conversation with Nikolai Begg. So we've got a couple of questions from the audience, but I asked this question yesterday, and I'd like to just kind of open up with it again. When we think about cars and what cars can be 10 years from now, the driving experience, other than perhaps if the cars are driving for us, but I think the car experience, and I'm not sure if we'll get there, but the car experience will be very similar. I look at what's happening with robotic surgery, and I wonder what the OR 10 years from now will look like. Will you just have a doctor who's sort of a surgeon standing in the middle of some kind of network that's reading their movements and helping with the surgery? Do you envision that the OR 10 years from now being drastically different than the one we have today, or will it look mostly familiar with some new things with blinking lights and shiny tools? What's the future surgery look like to you?
Well, so I go back to that concept of trade-offs, right? And it kind of depends on which one of those factors or constraints you index on. Right? Because you think about what's possible with technology. I mean, the vision, right, that you can draw, you can sketch out is endless, right? I mean, whatever you can envision is probably going to be possible in 10 or 20 years. But then you also have the shifting site of care, right? How hospitals are dividing their caseload between different operative settings. You can think about the economic factors at play. You can think about the drugs that might come online. And so I think that what the future operating room ends up really looking like at scale, it's going to depend on those inventive solutions that break the trade-offs, right? Because that hyper futuristic operating room that that kind of looks like something out of a movie, it's going to pull on the strings of those other factors. And so finding a way to add extraordinarily advanced technology that augments the workflow or improves the workflow instead of adding steps, right? Or finding a way to increase access around the world to surgical procedures or minimally invasive surgical techniques. With technology and economic factors at play. So I don't know that I plant my flag in one particular vision of the future operating room, but I am excited to find out how those different trade-offs get solved with inventive solutions.
Great. And like I said, we have a couple of questions from the audience, but keep them coming. Just one more question for me. Well, for now, I'm sure I'll have others. But we have a Device Talks Boston. We'll have a robotics event that's adjacent to it. So we have a robotics business that's part of our business, not part of Device Talks, but part of our parent company. Anyway, most of the other robotics systems I see are largely, I think, intended to replace people. People working in warehouses, people driving tractors. This is the only thing I can think of, and I don't know if you're obviously looking at the world at large, but is there any other industry out there where companies like Medtronic are creating robotic systems that have the person at the center and are augmenting their abilities rather than replacing the person outright?
I love that question. It speaks back to that technology appropriation concept. I know that I have seen instances where if you think about operating and it's a completely different problem that's being solved, but operating in a potentially hazardous environment, right? Whether it's, it could be defense, but it could also be, kind of chemically hazardous environments or thermally hazardous environments, kind of allowing the operator to, to operate, at a position of safety. Again, a very different problem to be solved. I think what is so unique and what I love about the space we work in is, again, the surgeon is at the center, right? The surgeon is right there in the operating room. And they're, going back to this story of open surgery to laparoscopy to robotic surgery, if you think about open surgery, there's that direct connection from the surgeon to the patient. Right? They are hands on the patient. So you think about introducing technology, there's a potential to create space. And that we recognize is such a critical need in the OR for the surgeon to remain at the center of that procedure, for the surgeon to remain directly connected with the operating room staff, with the environment. So if you think about design choices we made, like our open console, allowing the surgeon to still be present, right? To be able to see what's happening and interact with the surgical staff.
All right, we'll end that conversation with Nikolai right there. And then Nikolai's a great guy. We had a nice conversation. He grew up in the Boston area, as did I. So prior to the episode at Device Talks Tuesday, we talked a bit about that. But really, if you want a look at or an understanding of how engineers look at innovation in medtech, I do recommend you go to devicetalks.com and watch Nikolai's presentation on demand. And again, while you're there, check out Catherine Rieger of Intuitive, her discussion on user interface and how it plays into surgical design. And the folks at Virtual Incision, Shane Farator, who's Chief Technology Officer, and Pete Hanul, who is Chief Medical Officer, put on a grand show for Virtual Incision, really demonstrated the power of its mirror miniaturized surgical robotic system. So all three are available to you for free at devicetalks.com under Device Talks Tuesdays. You can, again, watch them at your convenience. And now we'll get into our keynote interview with Bridget Bagnano. She is the worldwide president of specimen management at BD, and she happens to be this week celebrating her 25th anniversary at the company, which I didn't know until the day I was putting this podcast together. So happy anniversary to her. Congratulations. And I hope you all enjoy this conversation. Well, Bridget Bagnano, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Tom. Thanks for having me.
As I said before I push record, I'm excited to talk to you, but also I want to learn more about this amazing mini draw device of yours, because I'm the parent of a son who has had more than his share of needles and absolutely hates them. And I would love to find a way to decrease his anxiety. And this looks like it could help. So kudos to BD. He's going to probably be a huge fan of yours going forward. And I'll share the podcast with him once we're done. But first, before we get into the product and the company, I want to talk about you, the guest. What was your background? How did you find your way into the medtech industry?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. So I'll kind of get started. It goes a little while back, but my youngest brother was an extreme preemie, and he weighed just 3 pounds when he was born. And so for the first few years of his life, it was pretty touch and go. And much of that time he spent in the hospital. And when he finally came home, he came home with a ton of medical equipment. So we had a huge oxygen tank, suction machines because he had a trach, and nebulizers and so on. And so, you know, really early, I realized that the clinical staff, you know, medical equipment, and of course my parents, right, helped keep him alive. And I really knew that I wanted to be a part of that somehow. And so that's what brought me to healthcare in the medical device industry and to BD ultimately, where I started my career about 25 years ago.
Wow, that's amazing. How old were you at the time that he was born? Were you?
I was about 9 years old.
Okay. So you were paying attention. It definitely makes an impact, and I'm sure it upended your world considerably.
It really did. And you know, it's a scary time, right, for family, because you care so much, but you realize that you're not the only one that cares, right? So whether it's the nurses, whether it was the doctors, whether it was the aides and all the life-saving equipment he had, you know, I remember catheter he had in his scalp. I remember all the wow. blood that was being pulled, right? And ultimately now he's this kind of big burly 6 foot guy, right? You would never know, but you know, that's really what brought me to healthcare.
Okay. And I was going to ask how his story has continued, and it sounds like he's not a preemie anymore. So what were your steps toward working in the healthcare or the medtech industry? Had you considered engineering, or did you want to be a doctor at any point? What was the path?
Great question. I did at first. I thought my foray into healthcare was going to be through, you know, being a physician. And I got to school, I got to undergrad, and realized I was much more action oriented. I didn't think I could be in school that long. And so coming out of school, I said, well, I'd like to be in the healthcare industry. I really have always found solace in being in hospitals. I know some people find them scary. But I wanted to be in that space. And so after a few months of kind of searching, found my way to BD, which, you know, funnily enough, where I was living with my parents, it was probably about maybe 8 minutes from the campus. Never knew it was here. and so fortuitously, find my way into BD and started in what was known as a sales development program. So really didn't hire, you know, salespeople straight out of undergrad. So they kind of came in, help you learn the products, get you out with customers, and then you're invited to interview for a sales-facing role. And that happened, and I got my first role, was in sales for about 5 years, and then made my way into marketing for about a dozen years across different parts of the company. And now for about the last 8 years in general management roles, with my newest role being the business president for specimen management as of October of this past year.
Oh, congratulations. I didn't realize that it was that recent an announcement. I wanted to just circle back to your comment about hospitals and them giving you feeling like a peaceful place or a place that gives you solace. Have you ever identified what it is about it? Is it just the healing and the caring energy in there? Or because you're right, most people find it, I think we focus on the pain and the suffering and not the positive aspects of healthcare.
Yeah, I think I likened it back to when I was there with my brother, right?
Yeah.
So that's where I would actually go and visit him, and he was so tiny in an incubator. And I remember being, you know, by his side, and the one thing I recall is, like, you put your arms through that kind of incubator, and they grab onto your finger, and they latch on like no other, right?
Oh, wow.
And to me, that's so special, right? And both that, as well as seeing the outpouring of care and love from, you know, strangers ultimately that are healthcare providers, that's really, I think, what shaped me wanting to be in healthcare, because it's such a altruistic, patient-centered, you know, let's say care-driven organization and healthcare industry.
No, that makes sense, and that's a moment I know where, as a parent of two boys, I remember the meeting of the siblings for the first time. It's an important time. And for that to be, I imagine that was the first contact that you had through.
For sure.
Yeah. So that's going to leave an imprint for sure. So talk about your time at BD. Did you always have the idea that did you envision yourself someday as a worldwide president? And I'd like to unpack how you got there, but what were some of the businesses first that you worked in at BD? Give us a little bit of rundown of some of the portfolios you worked
in. Sure. So like I mentioned, I started my career in sales. I was based in the New York City area. So I had Upper New York, Upper Manhattan rather. I had Westchester, I had the Bronx, I had up through, let's say, Bridgeport, Connecticut, right? And I thought that was an amazing way to start my career, really being field facing, hearing our customers' problems. I covered our portfolio of products in our medication delivery solutions bag.
Okay.
So that was anything from catheters to sharps collectors to needles and syringes. But the fascinating part about that time is when I started was shortly after the healthcare legislation was passed for needle stick safety, right? So it was all about, you know, again, now tying back my history of being really tied to hospitals and caregivers. And now I felt like I was doing something for caregivers by helping to promote products that reduce needle stick injuries, because we don't want to hurt the people to help care for us in our time of need. So being a part of that and promoting safety products in the U.S. at that turn of that legislation was super fulfilling.
I bet. I talk a lot with people who are developing defibrillators or devices that have gone through clinical rigor, have evidence they can point to, have data you can say this does this better than that does this. What is the selling point in the goods that you offered in the materials that you've made available to hospitals? Was it just something that they ordered kind of because they always have, or were there things you pointed to that you could say that this is why you need this over that? What is that process like for that business?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say because of the newness of that safety legislation.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, think about it. Clinicians, what they do is just so natural to them that changing that process becomes a bit difficult. So it's that education of, we're going to change things because we're introducing safety products, right? But they're to benefit you, and they're, say, we're trying to disrupt your workflow as little as possible, right? So whether it's a catheter that when you're done, you push a button and it retracts back into the sheath to hide that needle and make sure that blood doesn't get exposed to you, or a syringe, right, that you're able to, you know, quickly shield that needle to, again, help from a needle stick injury. Those were the products that at that time we were bringing to the market in terms of category-leading safety products to help reduce needle stick injury risk.
Yeah, and I imagine that once you introduce that element of this product, and a doctor can see or a nurse can see that they're not at risk of that happening, that they're an immediate and loyal fan.
Right, because, you know, the scariness of contracting a bloodborne pathogen,
yeah,
right? When you're, yeah, caring for patients, you want your focus to be all about that patient, not whether you're going to get stuck and get sick potentially. So to me, that was a great discussion and a great value prop of what we could bring to the table. And there were other products too, you know, really centered around workflow efficiency. How do we reduce kind of the time and effort of those clinicians so that they can redouble down that focus on the patient?
Interesting. So were you able to carry the skills you developed in selling those to other businesses within BD as well? I'm looking at your LinkedIn profile now. I see diabetes care,
yes,
surgery. Talk a bit about where you went from there.
Yeah. So, you know, after I was in the field for a few years, I kind of went into the marketing field. I started by, having a product management role on portfolio of prefilled syringes. So it was, you know, let's say saline syringes, again, to help from an efficiency perspective, instead of nurses having to prefill their own and having it be more pharmaceutical grade and less risk of contamination, we've got everything prepackaged, pre-ready to go, ready to administer. So I did that for quite some time. I actually did an international assignment where I was based in Oxford, which at the time was our unofficial headquarters. That was an amazing growth experience. And then when I came back from that, I kind of had the global bug, and I started working with markets outside of the U.S. So I helped with the launch of that product in China, ultimately. And then after I did that, it was kind of my first foray. This is my second stint in this business. I spent some time between, was I think back then, 2010 and 2012 or 13, in what was formerly known as pre-analytical systems, leading our portfolio on the capillary side. So very apropos to our conversation today, and working on some new product development back then. After that, I went back to MDS, where I kind of had roles of increasing responsibility in marketing, and ultimately made that decision, I think what you were kind of alluding to before, Tom, of when do you make that decision to go down that GM route? Because it was a question, right? It's do you go down the functional path or do you go down the general management path? And I kind of kept doing some stretch assignments, asking good questions about it to see which one fit me right. And once I really learned what the GM track was about, I got bit and have been on that path ever since. And so, you know, my first GM role was leading what we call our catheter care platform today in medication delivery solutions. And then I transitioned over to diabetes care at that time, leading our injection business. So think pen needles, syringes, et cetera, for diabetic patients, both for self-injectors, right, as well as for clinicians that are providing those products as well, so on the safety front. And then moved to our surgery business, where I was leading a portfolio of infection prevention products as well as biosurgery products, and led a team there before I joined specimen management last summer here.
Okay. Do you offer advice to, I'm always interested in folks who stay at the same company. How do you find an advancement in that? Because it's very easy to move. I have this position here. I want to move up the ladder. The next rung is in the company over there. I'm going to go over there. Sometimes that can be almost harder, I think, to do within the same company. What is your advice to someone younger who wants to get on a path like yours and wants to make sure they're continuing to grow?
You know, first I would say, if you would have asked me 25 years ago if I would still be with the same company, I would have thought you were crazy, you know, and it's just not really heard of, right?
Yeah.
And I thought it would just be the same kind of thing. You know, I stay at this company a couple of years and then I go somewhere else. But honestly, BD is such a special place, both in terms of the diversity of what you can do, because there's all the different business units that I talked about. So at this point in my career, I've had roles in each of the segments. We've got three segments: medical, life sciences, and interventional. In each one, you kind of learn a different dynamic in terms of tools to pull out of your toolkit as a general manager, right? Whether it's physician preferred products on the interventional side, whether it's more of your value analysis committee type of decisions that are happening in the medical supply spaces. Now being very lab focused on the specimen management side, it really just makes you a better, you know, leader and more diversified, because you've kind of seen things at different lenses and you can then take them across your learning journey. And so for me, you know, I've never been bored, right? So I think that's been the trick for me is, you know, I always find myself growing and stretching, whether it's across different business units, whether it's, to your very good point, growing and developing people, because that's the best investment we can make. You know, I take a lot of pride in that, to me, or even learning new markets is really rewarding, but it's kind of this continuous growth journey. And I would be remiss to say it also is the people that are here at BD. It's just a really special place, filled with people that are solving, you know, fundamental healthcare problems and showing up in a very different way in the industry.
Oh, great points. All right, we'll take a quick break from this interview to bring back our sponsor, Aptix. Once again, I am speaking with CEO Greg Tobin. Greg, as I referenced earlier, Aptix has gone through a bit of a rebranding, and these are always interesting and sometimes can be risky propositions, although things seem to be off to a good start with Aptix. Can you give us a little more detail on why you decided to rebrand and a little bit about the thought that went into it?
I would love to, Tom. As you know, in the latter half of 2022, MDI was acquired by TruArc Partners, a private equity firm focused on supporting transformative growth for middle market companies. And shortly thereafter, we acquired GlobalMed, a leader in extruded tubing for respiratory, anesthesia, and smoke evacuation applications. These were the first steps in our vision to build a new kind of manufacturing company. As a first step, we needed a name and a brand that felt as big as our vision. We strongly believed that rebranding was strategically important to bring that vision to life. And so we selected the name Aptix because it makes a bold statement about where we want to go and also allowed us to honor the legacy of the companies that came before.
I know Aptix history is a big part of the story. You mentioned the 70-year history in manufacturing and the solutions you're offering. Can you expand a bit on your story, on your history, and how do you support MedTech customers?
Absolutely. Our history starts with molding. It's a core strength. Because of that, there's nearly nothing we can't do, whether it's injection molding, dip molding, or blow molding. We opened operations in 1949 with the founding of Seitz, a leader in complex injection molding, and in particular, precision gears that drive modern applications in areas such as robotics, drug delivery, and diagnostics. An important key to our success with molding is our in-house tool shop, where we design and build quick turn tooling.
So is Molded Devices also founded on injection molding?
Actually, Tom, we were a pioneer in dip molding nearly 60 years ago when Molded Devices was founded, and we remain a leader, having acquired many companies along the way. Beyond molding, we also manufacture millions of feet of extruded medical tubing annually, which is a growth area for us. And for over two decades, via our DipTech systems acquisition, we've been a leader in supporting coatings end-to-end from application to automation and equipment manufacturing. Finally, we provide device assembly in a range of geographies in environments ranging from white rooms to class 7 and class 8 clean rooms. And like most things, quality work begins and ends with people. You're only as good as your talent. And I say this often, engineering expertise is at the core of everything we do. It's the heartbeat of the company.
And final question, Greg, you get a lot going on. Give us a kind of an insider view. What's it like to be part of your team? And how is it to work with Aptix as a customer?
I would love to, Tom. When we say to our customers that your products are our purpose, we mean it. We know that the products that our customers make matter. We know it's critical to deliver on our promises to them. And because of this, we're very focused on building a collaborative culture that is rooted in doing business with straight talk, speed, and a commitment to quality. We're really focused on solving challenges and doing whatever it takes to get there, which is why we're investing in infrastructure, technologies, and capabilities, all for the purpose of better supporting our customers and the patients that they serve. At the end of the day, this is what really matters to us.
It's great to have Aptix as part of our Device Talks Weekly, as a sponsor of this Device Talks Weekly episode, and of course of this week's Device Talks Tuesdays episode. So if you want to find out more about Aptix, make sure you go to its website. It's aptix.com. And once again, that's aptyx.com. So you were on the front lines of healthcare, talking to the nurses and the folks who are interacting with patients every day when you were selling. I'm sure you still have a sense of what that environment is like. If you're not also out there making calls and talking to people, I'm not sure. But do you have a sense of what the healthcare setting of today is and how it compared to what it was? We hear about burnout and about shortages. What can you report from someone who's been out there and has seen things?
I think first and foremost, that's probably the biggest theme, right? Just staffing shortages. With the pandemic, we saw so many people leave the healthcare industry because of burnout, because of retirement, et cetera. And interestingly enough, about a year ago, you know, my mom was unwell and took her to the hospital. And this was probably like the January 23 timeframe. what I saw at a accredited tertiary hospital was pretty eye-opening. And it was gurneys lined up across the hallway, really difficult to get into a room. Patients, you know, a privacy, not really in an ideal situation. And you just saw nurses, techs, kind of running all over the place, trying to do the best they can with the resources they had, right?
Right.
I think the biggest change in dynamic has been that this staff shortage that has, you know, just been compounding the healthcare industry. And I think, you know, to your point, with that, also through the pandemic, really that kind of site of care shift that's coming away from the hospital as much as we can, especially when things are not a critical issue, right? As much as we can bring that care outside the hospital to help balance routine testing, et cetera, is well poised to take off because people don't want to end up, right, waiting, right, or having to delay what they need to do because the criticality of the patients that we're seeing in the hospital at this time.
No, I'm sure that must drive you. Those experiences must drive you and others at BD every day, just knowing that there's that those frustrations out there and trying to find ways to ease it. So let's talk about the mini draw now. Tell us a bit about the device and its capability. I talked about the ability to maybe avoid a big needle, but why don't you give us a more nuanced description of what BD mini draw is?
So mini draw is really a blood collection system that is really poised to turn traditional blood collection on its head. And the reason for that is it's because it's meeting consumers where they already are to enable a more patient-friendly experience. And so for me, it's you know, imagine going out to grab a carton of milk, you know, at your local pharmacy or grocery store and being able to get lab quality results with just a few drops of blood from your fingertips, right? That less invasive nature, that more convenient approach really has the opportunity to expand access across a variety of settings, right? And really drive access in terms of patients being able to do more proactive work in terms of managing their health in a more structured manner.
I thought about this as more of an advancement in blood collection, but the advancement appears to be in the testing aspect. Talked a bit about what technology and advancement has gone into the mini draw.
Sure. If you think about today, right, you're typically going to a patient care center or your physician office to get your blood drawn, right? And when you're doing that, you know, most of the time they're going and they're taking blood from your arm through a wing set or a needle and then getting a few tubes of blood in order to get tested, right? And so what this now does with mini draw is it takes that volume of blood to just a fraction of what that volume is today. And it's accessed through a fingertips prick, which is just painless. And also you never see the needle. So for those folks that are scared of needles, I know we talked about your son, and
yep,
he's not an anomaly, right? 1 in 4 patients are scared of needles. It becomes much more user-friendly, patient-friendly to get your blood drawn. And, you know, what I would say is really our belief is that blood collection should be easier and more convenient. And I'll kind of give a little anecdote of myself a couple months ago. I went to my GP to have my annual physical. And so my GP called and said, why don't you come about a week before, get your blood drawn, and that way I'll have your results for you when you're here and you're doing your physical. I said, great. You know, rearrange the calendar, get in there, you know, do a whole fasting thing, get in there, get my blood drawn through my arm, right, a couple of tubes. Promptly a few days later, they said, the courier never came and your blood didn't get to where to the lab, so we got to do it again.
So, oh, my gosh.
Doesn't stop there, Tom, right? Okay. All right. So again, you go through the calendar, you reschedule the visit, you kind of get back out there. I walk in and they look at me and they're like, oh, the phlebotomist is sick. And I said, are you kidding? And they said, you know, and again, it goes back to staffing shortages, right?
Yep.
They have a person who could be the backup phlebotomist because those positions are such a need. And so finally, on the third try, I got it. But that also meant that I had to go back another time to have the discussion with my GP in terms of the results.
Yep.
So it took 3 attempts to take my blood and get that the results, and another attempt to go and kind of talk about what that meant from a healthcare perspective or a treatment perspective. And so, like, ultimately to me, there's got to be a better way, right? And that's where mini draw comes in.
So talk about what mini draw can test for. I was going to have my physical. I ended up getting sick. I put it off, but I had the same thing. Well, I don't have time to go. I want to go get my blood drawn first. Now, of course, I have to wait until next spring to get my physical, but that's a different story. With a finger prick, be able to test for everything that the blood draw is going to test for, cholesterol, all the LDLs, the HDLs, all the other stuff they're looking at? Is it that functional?
Yeah, so the mini draw, there's two different tubes. There's an SST tube, which would be your chemistry analytes, your most commonly ordered chemistry tests, your lipid panel, for instance. And then there's something called an H&H tube, which is your hemoglobin and hematocrit. So these are some of the most commonly ordered tests that you would get in a normal physical. So that's absolutely a part of the approved analytes on this platform.
Wow. So how are you able to test for all of that with so much less blood?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So it's all about that technology that's embedded into the tube and really kind of this micro-sampling technology with our partner Babson that helps to enable kind of a miniaturization of that sample, but still yielding the same high-quality lab test results.
Okay. So, I mean, given the story you just told and the experiences we've all had with physicals, I mean, this would appear to be a game changer. I mean, I'm kind of wondering why every doctor's office is lined up to get one of these, and your job is going to be the simplest job in medtech to sell these things. But how do you see this being incorporated into healthcare, and what is the disruption potential?
Yeah, I great question. It's all about this paradigm shift that we're seeing. Really, all this is centered on a couple of irreversible forces that we're seeing in the market. So if you think about consumerization and connected care, right? We talked about care shifting outside of the hospital setting to non-traditional sites like the pharmacy, like your grocery store, and then ultimately better management of chronic disease because we know there's comorbidities out there. And so MiniDraw really helps on all three of those fronts. And it does so through improved access. That really is the kind of the linchpin of by bringing it closer to where you are, you can then enable patients a better experience and hopefully better adherence to the protocols that our doctors prescribe to us so that we can be more proactive about our health.
Is it able to conduct these tests more quickly than current? Do you get it immediately, or is it still a week or so you have to wait for, or a couple of days for results? Actually, you don't have to wait that long. How long does it take to test what it needs to test for? I'll just ask the question instead of offering my random thoughts on the world. Go ahead.
I think it's similar in terms of, you know, the blood collection experience is going to be pretty quick, right? You're just kind of going there. You're getting that finger stick. Like we said, probably on the collection side, that side of it, it's probably a quicker experience because, like you mentioned, you know, your son has some difficulty sometimes getting multiple sticks. There's probably about a quarter of the population, Tom, we call difficult venous access patients, right? And they may be patients that are, you know, oncology patients or geriatric patients that are just hard sticks, or maybe they're frequent flyers, we call them too, folks that get a lot of blood drawn in general. And with those patients, it's sometimes hard to get it on the first try. Well, you don't really have that problem when you're doing a finger stick, right? So that alone is saving time and effort, right? In terms of how that gets analyzed and the turnaround on that, that's actually quite similar and pretty quick, right? Okay. But you could get your results in 1 to 2 days, if not sooner.
Yep. As I was talking, I know that now that we're online, I do my blood results and I usually get blood tests and I get the results, if not later that afternoon, the next day. So it is a pretty fast turnaround. But I guess anecdotally, I always thought like, oh, well, you need different types of, like the capillary blood in your finger is not going to be able to, you're not going to be able to test for what you can when you draw it from the arm. And maybe I'm stupid because blood is blood. So was it always just a volume thing that you just needed to have so much more blood and that's why they went from the arm? It wasn't location of the blood or anything like that. And I sound like a moron, but answer my question.
It's a volume piece, right?
Yeah.
And it's ensuring that the equivalency between that venous drawn blood is also shown on the capillary blood, which was part of our whole clearance with the clearance package with the FDA, right? So to me, that's part of the kind of value prop we have with BD MiniDraw is that we've got that FDA clearance that shows that same high lab quality results with a capillary draw.
So how does this fit into our world? The courier who never picked up your blood, I guess potentially could be out of a job if you got one of these things because you don't need to courier the blood anymore anywhere. But do you see doctor's offices just having this and offering this? Do you approach Walgreens, which already tried once with Theranos, but maybe they're going to try again with a more reputable company like BD and bring it to the consumers directly? How does this kind of build out?
Yeah, I think to your very good point, right? How does this play out? You know, we talked about staffing shortages and the pressure on healthcare, right? So this is less about, let's say, people being out of jobs, but let's put people's focus where it's best had. And so first, when it comes to BD MiniDraw, well, today, your traditional blood collection can only be done by, let's say, a trained nurse or phlebotomist. MiniDraw can be done by any trained healthcare operator, like a pharmacy tech even.
Wow.
So now you're using different parts of your workforce to enable those draws. And so to me, right, it just helps even that workload and focus, you know, nurses or phlebotomists where they're most needed, right?
Yep.
And the other piece is around, you know, we talked about less labor time because of those difficult venous sticks, because MiniDraw doesn't, you know, require that venous access. I think the other thing that I think about is just in general, because you're drawing less volume of blood and typically your, you know, facilities are being charged on biohazard waste by that weight, right? You're reducing that footprint compared to traditional venous blood draws as well. So because you just have a fraction of that volume. So these are all kind of from a total cost and use benefactors to, you know, the current state.
So without sharing your super secret plans or anything, take me 2 years from now. If the rollout that you're attending happens, what does the blood draw world look like?
Yeah, you know, you're walking into your local pharmacy or your local grocery store. You're picking up a prescription, right? Or like we said, a box of eggs. And while you're doing that, you're getting a quick and easy blood draw via BD MiniDraw that, you know, you get timely results right in the kind of 1 to 2 day period. And you don't have to worry about kind of that anecdote I gave before about rescheduling things or scheduling your doctor's office visit, et cetera, or waiting on staff that might not show up because it's enabled in all these convenient locations already where you go today.
Yep. I'm glad I had to cancel my examination. Maybe in a year from now, they'll have BD MiniDraw and I won't have to get stuck with the needle. I don't like it. I mean, I'll do it, but I don't like it. Final question, and I guess I'm just trying to get my head around it because it is a seismic change of the healthcare world. Was there some sort of advancement in the technology that tests itself that made the miniaturization possible? I mean, I guess, what did you do that made this possible on a technical front? Was there some singular piece that made it all happen, or is this just something you've been kind of getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and now you've got it down to this handheld little device?
Yeah, I think just in general, like there's been a trend towards, you know, drawing less and less blood, right, Tom? That's good for the patient. It's, you know, we talked about the downstream impact of that too. It's good for the facility, et cetera. But, you know, to me, it's through our partnership with our partner Babson, both in terms of that back end that they're doing, as well as the collection side with the BD MiniDraw tube as well, that has enabled us to say, hey, you're going to get the most commonly ordered tests and be able to do that in this new environment to enable kind of this seismic shift in blood collection.
Hmm. And do you envision this being part of, you know, when surgical robotics first came out, there are hospitals advertising, we have the Da Vinci, you know, come, we have the Mako. Do you envision this being part of a marketing campaign for hospitals and doctors?
I do, right? Because to me, you know, making this user experience, patient experience easier, more convenient, faster, right, is part of the value that BD MiniDraw brings.
Yep.
And, you know, again, thinking through what that value is, not just to the patient, but to the facility, to the healthcare worker, is pretty daunting. And, you know, I think that's something that people would want to advocate for. And just you think about it, you know, when it comes to, you know, these days, folks are trying to get people into brick and mortar more and more, right? So if this is an added benefit of why you go to your local pharmacy to get your prescription, to pick up, you know, your hair products or your vitamins, as well as then, hey, while I'm there, I'll get my blood drawn too. It really improves that reason to go and really be there on site, but do many things in one visit.
Fantastic.
Including dropping off your Amazon package, right?
Exactly, yeah. It's just there's so much going on. And again, getting my COVID and my flu vaccine at the same time.
Exactly.
Yep. Fantastic. Bridget, thanks for taking the time. It's been a really great conversation.
Thank you so much, Tom. It's been great.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Aptix, for sponsoring this episode. Thanks to Medtronic and BD for being part of this episode, and thanks again to you for listening. Do us a few favors, if you would. Subscribe to the Device Talks Podcast Network. That way you don't miss a future episode. Share this podcast episode on social media. And when you do, please tag me, tag Chris Newmarker, tag Device Talks, tag Mass Device, so we can all be part of that conversation. And if you're not sharing it, I understand. I wish you would. But if you're not sharing it, connect with me anyway. Would love to be part of your future MedTech conversations. Do the same with Chris Newmarker, as in a new marker. We won't have any humble figurines to share with you, but we might have some insights and stories and things that you would enjoy. So make sure you connect with us on LinkedIn. That's it. Once again, don't forget to register for Device Talks Boston before March 31st to qualify to be part of the pool from which we'll draw at random the folks who can take the tour at Medtronic's Surgical Robotics headquarters, and use the code DTWeekly25. And if you're not selected, we're going to love seeing you at Device Talks Boston. It's going to be a great few days. We've got conversations with Intuitive, CMR, Distal, Baxter, BD, goes on and on and on, Stryker. Go to boston.devicetalks.com to check out the growing speaker list and evolving agenda. It's going to be a great 2 days. I would love to see you there. All right. Tune in next week. We'll have another great episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast sent directly to you. Take care, everybody.